My name is George Kuhar, and we are at my home, me and my wife's home, that we share on North Douglas Highway in Juneau, Alaska.
What's her name?
Bridget.
She's at work today? Where is she?
She is at work, yeah. She works at JAMI. She's a clinician there.
Part of her is with you here today, though.
That's right.
Yeah? Let me have you tell that story.
Okay. So I moved up here in 2007 as a wandering soul, and I'd met Bridget. And shortly after, within months of us moving in together up here, I had lost my kidneys, and that's due to a genetic condition I have called Alport's syndrome. So in the process of being on dialysis, Bridget looked into being a donor for me, a kidney donor. And we're the same blood type, and everything matched up. So we had a transplant surgery, and the surgery went well. You know, it was a success. And that was 11 years ago, I believe, now. So I'm still doing pretty good.
When the transplant happened, were you and your wife married yet?
We were not, no.
What an engagement present.
Right. I hadn't thought of it like that, but yes, an engagement present. Yeah.
You want to share some music with us?
Sure. I'm thinking this is going to be the song that kicks off the whole project. You know, I have a hard time receiving things from people. My tendency is, oh, no, thank you. No, I don't want to be a bother, you know. But something like that, you know, it was impossible to say no. But at the same time, the biggest gift you can receive is like a piece of somebody's body. And as an artist and a songwriter, I don't necessarily have the ability to just like speak about it. But it comes out in my work, I think, I hope. And this is something that I've never done, where like the whole thing, I've kept it like a secret, haven't let anybody hear it, because I really wanted to not make music for an audience. I really wanted to make music that was a necessity, an expression.
So you haven't shared any of this with anyone yet?
Most of it, nobody's heard. You know, you hear a lot about, you know, don't let your condition define you and all this. And I kind of wonder if that's like the wrong advice for me anyway, because I have like 10 years after all this has happened, I've like finally come back around to like, you know what? I shouldn't be putting that aside as an artist that exists separate of my, you know, chronic condition. So like in the past year here, I've really started thinking again about making, like reincorporating that to my life's work. You have to be true to yourself, and ultimately that's not just a benefit to you, but to the world around you.
Learn how to fall, and when you fall, forgive yourself and get back up again. So my name is Shubhadrang Khalsa, and my roller derby name is Bam Bam.
My name is Jennifer Gross. We're at the Juneau Skate Park. I'm not actually sure if it has an actual name.
Remind me your roller derby name.
I am Runtime Terror, because I code. I love my number. It's 404.
So you do roller derby, but now here you are in this skate park. Riding quarter pipes and half pipes and stuff.
Yes.
I mostly came to the skate park to have more time to skate so I'd be better at roller derby.
Let me have you describe these skates. These are pretty spectacular.
They're suede.
Blue suede roller skates.
Yes, blue suede roller skates.
Elvis would be proud.
Yes.
So your professional field is computer science.
Yes, sir.
Tell me how you found your way to Juneau.
thought I would have to move anyway because there's not a lot of computer science jobs in Mississippi. I just didn't know I'd move this far.
What kind of a shock was it to move from Mississippi to Alaska?
It was cold. I moved up here at the end of November after Thanksgiving, and looking back at old pictures, I was still wearing shorts in November, and up here it was already snowing.
Tell me how you two crossed paths.
Roller derby. I think she found us. We were having a bake sale to raise some money, and she said, hey, I can skate, and we said, come on by.
It was a pretty big learning curve because I was also, at the same time I was joining the team, I was still learning how to skate. And so they're really fun and encouraging. They teach you how to skate. They don't ever make you feel bad about it. And then you're just learning the rules as you go.
She's amazing. She's just shown like a star. I would say that when you join a roller derby team, you join a squad of amazingly powerful, strong-willed women, and it creates this uplifting atmosphere. I mean, we spend practices knocking each other down and at the same time also lifting each other up by doing that. So it's pretty amazing. I've only met amazing people through roller derby.
What do you love about being on roller skates?
Just fun.
I love that I can just fly on wheels and do, I mean, everyone perceives you as a badass. What can I say?
My name's Adam Dimmitt. This neighborhood is referred to as the village. The ocean used to be here, and then they filled in between here and the water with mine tailings. The stuff that they were digging out of the mountains, they deposited down here, so everything, you know, the shore used to be right in front of us. And so this, my shop, I'm told, was a boat mechanic shop.
And there's a much different kind of work that you're doing in here today.
This looks good. This right here is the machine that was the original Lark that got out of hand. It's a CNC plasma table. I'm able to take digital drawings and then cut those designs out of metal with a plasma arc.
And yours is homemade. You built this thing.
Yeah, I did. I hit play, and the torch goes to the first place where it needs to make a cut, and it'll start cutting out the contour. It takes compressed air, a lot of electricity, and it creates a really, really hot jet conducted through the material that's being cut.
Doing a home craft project is one thing, but creating a plasma cutter, it just doesn't seem like something you'd be allowed to permit yourself to do.
I'm not smart enough to know that I'm not supposed to do these things. I think I'd say it's a really neat time to be alive, and that anything that you want to learn how to do, you can freely go and learn how to do it. This is a product of that and a lot of late nights. I've done stainless steel letters for one of the big office buildings downtown, did an aluminum sign for a marijuana dispensary. These are air conditioning grate covers for an elementary school that are a form line design. Those are really neat. I like those. And
Christmas ornaments.
Christmas ornaments, yeah, yeah. So those pay the rent.
How'd you make your way to Juneau, to Alaska?
I went to Kansas State University. I studied aviation there. And then I eventually got a job here flying little airplanes, little six-seat kind of bush planes around here. Probably the most formative time philosophically for me was when I was flying a small airplane out on the peninsula out in the Aleutians. And it's really barren out there, and it's really harsh, but it's also really beautiful. And you see things like whales washed up on the beach and bears eating carcasses of dead whales. And I've seen wolves eating a caribou. And so I've been accused of nihilism before because I got a sense out there that the universe really doesn't care. That we're all biomass that's being converted into different forms all the time. And that seemed a little too harsh. That seemed a little too dark, I guess, to be able to just kind of go through life with that as your frame of reference. And so I think that the things that I do here help me continue to process those questions. And I hope that some of the things that I do are positive moral exchanges.
I'm Janice Schufelt. I'm a retired bicycle racer. There's a fun local road racing group here in Juneau, so I did local races. And at one point, a friend of mine, we watched this video of Race Across America, which is a 3,000-mile bike race from San Diego to Annapolis. And I thought, well, that's crazy. I would never do that. The first, like, 30 hours, I just rode through, you know, started at noon, rode through that night. And then after that, the plan was to sleep 90 minutes a night, which is generally what I did the whole way. And I had a crew of 10 people, 3 vehicles. So I had a little headset on my helmet with an earpiece, and then the navigator in the follow vehicle would tell me through my headset, you know, it's going to be turn right at that stop sign, whatever, you know, navigating through all these cities. In Colorado, I was having more and more trouble breathing. This is on like the third day of the race, and I couldn't breathe, and we went to a small local emergency room. We thought maybe it was the altitude, but the doctor thought it wasn't altitude. You did x-rays and blood tests and just thought it was asthma. I started riding, but I was never the same. Like, I was slowed down so much from that point, and my breathing was bad the rest of the race. You know, I didn't expect to win. There are about 50 men who started and 6 women. I had no idea if I was competitive against the other 5 women or not. But at that point, I had been in the lead for a couple days. So I was mainly relieved to make it and to keep that first place.
I mean, you must remember the moment of crossing the finish line.
Yes. So just elation and joy and gratitude for the crew. Especially because I had basically ridden myself to the point of needing to be in the hospital. Since the race, my breathing has never been the same. I take 3 asthma medications every day now, and before the race, I had never taken any asthma medication.
You think it was worth it?
What a question. I knew that if I never did Race Across America, I would regret it the rest of my life. But it's really interesting because before that race in 2014, I had told my family, this is it. I'm going to retire. Like, I'm not going to do this anymore because it's such a selfish sport. I mean, I spent so many hours training, and that's time away from my kids. It wasn't healthy in my overall life to keep doing that, and I had planned to retire. But of course, you know, once the race is done, you just get that itch again. You want to do it. And I would have kept doing it if I wasn't limited by the asthma. So in a way, it's good because it's held me to my plans of, I teased my kids, you know, they were teenagers at the time. I said, well, I'm normal now because I don't bike race anymore.
And so we're on a covered porch here that looks out at the water. And now let's walk inside. We go in the front door here. The main cabin is just a 16 by 16 foot room. And there'll be a wood stove back there to keep us warm. And it's a quick tour of this little building. You can see the whole thing pretty much from one place. We've been working really hard on this cabin. We started at the end of May, and it's been all work this summer on the cabin, and it was kind of interesting to sit down in the chair with you guys right now and look out the window and kind of relax for a moment. Hi, my name's Tim Bluest. We're sitting inside my cabin that's under construction on Shelter Island. We're about 10 miles from Juneau, Alaska. There's no utilities on the island, and it's accessible only by boat. The whole front of the cabin is a wall of windows, and the views are wonderful. When I was working last week, I heard a loud booming noise. I turned around, and there was a humpback whale breaching right in front of the cabin. Yeah, it's the view really makes the place. I knew from the time I was a young kid growing up in Oregon that I really wanted to move to Alaska. I started getting Alaska Magazine when I was in grade school. I moved to Alaska actually the day that I finished my last class of college. All of a sudden, 36 years have gone by. Jeannie's out here working in the garden. She's weeding strawberry beds, getting them ready for next summer.
My name is Jeannie Monk, and my husband is Tim, and I'm growing whatever vegetables and fruit we can manage out here to feed my family. So we have four long rows of strawberries, and they bloom in July, and then kale, carrots. I try and just grow things that are easy. We met when we were young. I had just come to Juneau while I was doing a master's program to work for a summer doing a practicum, and a friend of mine invited me to go out kayaking with her friends. And Tim was there, and I attribute our relationship to somebody brought brown rice. And if you cook brown rice over a fire, it takes a long time for dinner to be ready. So a few glasses of red wine and waiting for the rice to cook, and that was the beginning of our relationship.
My wife, Jeannie, has been the backbone of the whole project. She goes to work and makes this whole thing possible. I'm mostly retired, and so she's financed the whole thing, and then she comes out on the weekend and works on the project right alongside of us.
It's been a lot of work. It's consumed everything in our family lives. So I would say I'm much more interested in the outcome, whereas he is much more interested in the process. And so I was really happy a week ago when we got the windows in because it felt like things were kind of getting moving forward. So, but it's definitely been a memorable project.
I feel like the cabin has always been an inevitable in the back of everyone's minds and like always talked about.
My name's Max. I'm 22 years old and I am Tim and Jeannie's eldest son. My younger brother's Aaron, and right now I go to school at Portland State University.
You go up and down the beach on Shelter Island, and there's this constant sound of rushing water. Describe the geography of this island and what's making that sound.
That's a waterfall. We have many streams that come down out of the kind of highlands in this area, and the highlands are made up of kind of these high plains, which are very saturated, and you're not seeing any conifers growing in that area, or if they are, they're very stunted. So it's kind of this open area, but up there at the same time we have beavers, and beavers are falling trees and making ponds, and so there's constantly water kind of shedding off of all sides. And so we have a kind of a ridge line, which is the main water line, watershed line, and everything, you know, west of that's going to come down this side. And the island's about, you know, 6 miles long, so it's a lot of watershed. I think here on the island, the main purpose of coming out here is just to get away and to disconnect, and it's just a very peaceful place all around. Yeah, that's why we like to come out here, I think. Yeah.
You've been listening to Out of the Blocks
from radio producer Aaron Henkin and music producer Wendell Patrick.
Special thanks to field producer M.K. McNaughton and KTOO Public Media.
Aaron and Wendell want to thank all of us who took a leap of faith and shared our stories and our lives.
For WYPR and PRX,
this is Juneau, Alaska, signing off.
Signing off.
You're listening to a special edition of Juneau Afternoon. We just heard the full-length episode of Out of the Blocks Part 2 featuring voices from Juneau, Alaska. And now part two of my interview with Out of the Blocks producer Aaron Hinken and field producer M.K. McNaughton. How do you choose your locations, Aaron, and what made you select Juneau, Alaska?
We will look around. When we started branching out and going to other cities around the country, we sort of based it on cities where we had public radio counterparts that we could lean on to be field producers. So we had friends in St. Louis who do a podcast out there. That's why we went to St. Louis. We had a good liaison in Detroit. That's why we went to Detroit. And then we began sort of branching out and thinking about, places that have sort of boilerplate stories told about them, and what would it sound like if we gave our treatment to that place. It was ultimately this friend of mine I'm talking about who listens to the show. He listens to Out of the Blocks, and he said, "Have you ever, I just went to Juneau. Have you ever thought about that?" And at first I sort of chuckled, like, "Well, wouldn't that be crazy?" And then I started thinking more and more about it. And again, when you pay attention to your own curiosity, you kind of realize, like, huh, wouldn't you want to know? So we just followed that lark, and it's humbling to me every time I go somewhere outside of Baltimore and I'm reminded just how huge this country is and yet how communal so many of our stories are.
And did you follow your one block rule when you got here?
Ah, no, we cheat a little bit when we visit another city. We expand out a little bit to give our field producer a little more latitude in terms of, being able to get people on board to interview.
Good call.
Juneau is a little more spread. Baltimore's got very, very dense city blocks. And so it's a format that we've gradually relaxed a little bit about that idea, even in our own town. I guess if you ask how the show is changing, we're chilling out about that whole block. I mean, it's kind of a cool premise, and it makes for a good title for a podcast, but, it helps to give field producers a little more leeway, too, to find those kind of luminous characters.
There's Out of the Blocks and Way Out of the Blocks.
Yeah, right.
How did you select this cross-section of individuals here in Juneau? What kind of collection of stories were you aiming to put together?
I'm going to turn that over to MK to answer.
I listened to several of the podcasts first and was moved by Aaron's philosophy that everybody has a story to tell. And I was looking for ways that we connect and, across the country. And also ways that were really unique. So I tried to pick a selection of stories that represented Juneau, stories about the history of people here, Tlingit people, and people who've moved here in recent years, and a variety of activities, hunters, artists, athletes, and variety of ages as well. So I was looking for a mix, and some of them sort of stumbled into my lap just before the podcast. I was leaving a painting group one night, and one person said something to another about the time there was a bear in a cage in her driveway when he came to drop off a casserole. And I said, "What?" I knew her husband was a wildlife management person. And so we invited him to be part of the podcast, and he tells a great story.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
Yeah. So I found some new people thanks to being invited to organize the podcast. I tried hard too to pick people that had multiple stories to tell. I love that when I read books. I love the books that weave in multiple stories. So you just it's a 3D. Picture of a person, and sometimes the interviews were just so incredibly rich that I think everything couldn't, I wish they could have been longer, Aaron. I wish there were some people that It was fun to hear how you edited and how you what you edited down. And I started to say this earlier and lost my train of thought, but it was really fun to watch Aaron collecting sounds. So Wendell's the music guy, but Aaron didn't tell you that he is also a musician. And he also skateboards. When we went to the skateboard park, he popped in. There are all kinds of and his wife is a stand-up comedian. And,
oh my
like, it was fun to get to know them. But Aaron collects sounds, and one time, and Wendell's always taking pictures and videos, too. So when you're around them, it's just this whirlwind of activity. I remember Wendell was in the closet in my art studio while we had a painting session going on, and he was showing me on the breaks little videos from past jobs. And there was a video of Aaron collecting sounds on site. And he was pounding on washing machines in a laundromat. And so that was a great fun bonus to the process, too, thinking about this. I thought about the stories and the people and the places you asked about going on site.
Mm-hmm.
But the I have a greater appreciation now for all the sounds around us. Oh, and I have to add that Wendell puts all kinds of tricky little sub-stories in his music. I learned from hanging out with him. So I listen to the podcasts. I recommend listening to them at least twice. Mm-hmm. First time for the words and the second time to hear the sounds under the story. And after the bear story, and I texted Wendell and said, did I hear what I think I heard?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't want to, yeah, no spoilers.
No,
but, yeah,
no. I think there are lots of other things that I'm still trying to hear, figure out what else I missed, the little humorous sub-stories.
That's yeah, great. It's the benefit of having someone custom score the piece, you know? It's like all of a sudden it's like another character in the story, the music.
Aaron, what did you learn from being here in Juneau, Alaska?
You know, I think the thing that'll stick with me most is something that Kristi Nami Erickson said when we were visiting with her in her living room, and her son had come home from school. He was on the floor playing Legos. And she said, you know, people, when they think about Juneau, they think about the landscape and the physical beauty of this place. But she said, to me, what really makes this place what it is that we all depend on each other. She said, we belong to each other. And I really got that sense from, you know, everyone I met. You all are, you know, with the highway system being what it is, you're effectively, you know, a landlocked island. And, you know, you treat each other like you belong to each other. That's what I'm always going to remember.
Mm. MK, how about you? What did you learn from this experience?
I think hanging out with Aaron and Wendell was an invitation to me to slow down a little bit. There, even in Juneau, you can get caught up in your daily routine and rush by somebody on the street. And I've slowed down and had a few extra little chats sometimes with people I see often that I walk by in a rush. And just the everyday magic, too. I think when Aaron and Wendell were here, I took them to Shelter Island, so we stayed on a cabin on an island, and I invited them to be models for my portrait painting group, and they both gamely sat through that, and then I benefited from hearing their stories. They stayed in an Airbnb that turned out it was right by the fire training parking lot, kind of. So you know. Saw videos.
Yeah,
of...
it was a good deal. Not the most picturesque Airbnb in Juneau. Yeah. But
they made adventures out of the everyday moments. That's what I'm trying to say by that, too. And that was super fun to have that adventure together. And I ended this project feeling really energized and respected. And I don't always feel that way when I end projects. Sometimes you feel kind of exhausted.
Yeah.
But I didn't at all. So I thank you so much for that, Aaron.
Well, right back at you. I mean, this project, we're facilitators of other people and their stories. And, you know, the project ended up being what it was because of the people you chose to introduce us to. So you've got our gratitude for that.
I think that's a great note to end it on. So thank you both for speaking with me today. And thank you for producing this beautiful, these two beautiful episodes about Juneau, Alaska and our people.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, thank you, Shelley.
Thank you so much for listening today. We hope you enjoyed episodes 1 and 2 of the podcast Out of the Blocks, featuring voices from Juneau, Alaska. Next week, Juneau Afternoon will remain on winter break. We'll resume on Monday, January 13th. In its place, please enjoy a variety of programming, and to listen to past episodes of Juneau Afternoon or to schedule an appearance in the new year, please go to ktoo.org/JuneauAfternoon. Until tomorrow, have a great Juneau evening. Thank you.